Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt the Unknown.
And I am Sir Jimmy the Relieved. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are in House of Dragons Season 1, Episode 5. It's a rewatch of the episode titled We Light the Way, aka the last episode with our younger cast before we do the big time jump, which I'm actually pretty excited for, to be honest with you. But Matt, how are you doing today?
Wow, man, I said I'm unknown today because I don't even know like what day it is anymore, where I'm at, what's going on. You know, yesterday it was like 7 p.m. and I was like, did I shower today? I don't remember if I did or not, man. Let me tell you, this whole newborn business, woo, it'll get you.
Yeah, I feel like you had a really good, you know, first week or so. I mean, some hangups, but like that adrenaline rush was going. And now maybe the tank's going a little low, possibly.
Yeah, man. It's just, you know, Ellie was born with a few little medical issues. Nothing major. Well, ish. But so, man, we're just doing all these appointments and stuff like that. So that makes it really hard. So it's just like every time I come home, it was like literally it's like there are some days where we have like 3 appointments. Then I come home and it's like, did I eat today? Did I work out? You know, and then thankfully, you know, my mother-in-law and sister-in-law come over and they are helping a ton. So huge shout out to them, by the way. And wow, man, you know, it's like they'll come over and it's like, all right, I guess I'm going to go nap because I need to get some sleep. Then I wake up and it's like, what's going on? You know, it's just, it's
very disoriented.
It is. I don't even know what day it is anymore. You know, I go back to work on Monday, so I think that'll kind of put me right in the bag. And then I'm like, okay, I'm a little more into a rhythm again.
Yeah, I think having a schedule will at least remind you what to eat, hopefully, and what day it is. Whenever you're not eating, that is when you know things are chaotic.
Because
for me, if I skip lunch, that means that work is really bad. Like really, 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 really bad. Because usually I'm counting down minutes. I'm like, can I eat now?
Yeah, I thought you were going to be Sir Jimmy the Flooded.
Not the Flooded. I am relieved because I finally cut. Like, I've been doing this little experiment where I've been trying to, like, grow out my hair. Like, on top, I've always had kind of long hair. I do, like, the undercut deal. But I was letting my sides grow out because I was thinking about doing, like, this Leonardo DiCaprio, like, suave back thing. And no one told me for the last, like, 4 months that it looked like shit. And I decided to get it cut off. And I feel so much lighter. And I feel great. So I feel relieved that I'm back to a very normal haircut and I don't look so bad. But I was the Flooded because I went to New York City.
How was that, by the way? Big Apple.
Phenomenal. Phenomenal. Let me tell you what. For all you New York City haters out there, get bent. I love New York City. New York City, the thing I like about New York City is that no one's going to pretend that about anything. Like if you are holding up a line and there's only 5 items on the menu, and you're still trying to decide what you want, they're going to tell you that you're an idiot because there's only 5 items on the menu and you're not the center of the world. And for me, that's the kind of vibe I like. I like just getting things done, getting it out of the way. You're not the center of attention. Let's move on. I love it. I love the efficiency of it. I love the hustle. And the food is just outrageous. I mean, I had pizza every day. It was all 5 stars and ended up having a place called Bagel and a Schmear, which is the best bagel I've ever had. It was tremendous. So we had a great time. I ended up going to the Comedy Cellar, which is a legendary comedy spot. Louis used to shoot his show there, Louis CK, and many others like Jerry Seinfeld and such. So that was a great time. I rode the subway for the first time, which wasn't nearly as bad as everyone tells you it's going to be.
It's okay. I kind of liked it.
I mean, I had been walking around the city all weekend long, and then when we finally got on the subway, it was with my wife's cousins who have lived in New York City for 30 years, so they just guided us, and I was like, oh my god, I could have saved so my feet so much pain.
Oh my god,
yeah. Had I taken
no subway. you just got a subway everywhere.
I did like 50 or 60,000 steps in 2.5 days.
I'm sure.
So like I was trucking, like we were moving around. So
what where were we at?
I was in Chelsea. Yeah.
Okay.
And that was mainly where we stayed, but I did end up going to Brooklyn and, of course we visited up near Central Park, went up, Upper West Side and stuff like that. So we had a great time. And I also got to see the Book of Mormon, which I've been waiting to see for like 15 years or 10 years or however long it's been out. And it was worth the wait. I love, oh, I loved it, Matt. It was so fun. Yeah. It's
that's
so
like the South. That's the South Park guys, right?
Yeah. South Park creators, and it's all about two boys going on a mission, and they think that they're going. I won't ruin it for anybody, but they don't end up going where they want to go, which is Orlando, Florida. That's the guy's dream. He's like, I just all love right. Orlando, and he ends up going somewhere that is not Orlando. And wow, what a show! Brilliant performance. Also reasonably priced. I thought it was going to be super expensive because it was on Broadway and it's so popular. Wasn't that bad. And yeah, phenomenal. Had a great time. And I got home just beat. I was beat. Also, I took a train for the first time in my life. And it was
super easy. Because you're Baltimore area, so that's not too long of a...
Yeah, I could not speak highly enough of the Amtrak. I was blown away by the ease of use and the cost effectiveness of it. And we'll be doing it again. But anyways, came home exhausted. And I got a little bubble when I walk in, and I'm like, what the hell is that in my ceiling? And Matt, right before I had left, I had flushed the commode and it made a really weird noise. And I was like, that's probably not good, but I'm going on vacation, so I'll deal with it when I get back. Well, it turns out, folks, that you shouldn't do that. And I should have shut off the water because I ended up having not a metric meltdown, but I had a pretty bad leak and now have to have someone come and fix my ceiling in my walkway, which is very unfortunate. I've had a suspicion that something was wrong with this toilet since I moved in about 2 years ago. Like, I knew something was up, and I was right. I was certainly right. I just shouldn't have procrastinated on it. So I had to come home and deal with that, which kind of wiped out all the enjoyment.
And was it leaking? Was it leaking into the hallway or whatever?
It was leaking.
The worst. Because you have to start worried about mold and get...
Oh, yeah. There was 100% already mold forming because it had been there. And I think that there had been water building. I think it just kind of... whatever it was got worse when we were gone. And so I had to shut off the water and try to figure everything out, have someone come out, and it's all getting resolved, so it's all fine now. But not cash money is how I would describe it.
No.
Yeah.
Well, hey man, get those leaks fixed. Okay. You know, those are important things to do. But hey, speaking of leaks, Jimmy.
Oh, okay.
Good little transition here.
Where
there apparently is going to be a Game of Thrones MMORPG. Let's go.
We have been talking about this for years.
We have been saying, where are the big Game of Thrones video games? What do you think about it being in an MMO? Apparently
tone deaf. It's tone deaf.
Yeah.
MMOs are not favorable right now in the market at all. Even live service games are starting to kind of be looked down upon besides Helldivers. So that's concerning. I don't know anything about the studio. Is it like Nexus or something like that? Or Nexa?
Yeah. So I'll read. This is from an IGN article. Nexon, I'll have to look up more about them, is developing a Game of Thrones MMORPG. And apparently said it might be a mobile game.
Oh, I'm out.
I don't really know. Oh, you think so? But apparently it's going to be set during in between season 4 and season 5. If you were going to do a Game of Thrones MMO, I would set it in like the Age of Heroes or something. Like way far away from everything else, sort of like Knights of the Old Republic did in the Star Wars, where it can kind of exist on its own. You have cool characters, there's things you see, but it should kind of not interfere with the story, because if the game, let's say the game were to be a massive success, as you were to continue on, I mean, WoW's been out forever. You know, the Old Republic is still going. There's other MMOs that are still going, and eventually you have to keep adding story content. So you'd kind of lock yourself in. So I don't know, man. I have mixed feelings about it. On one hand, I'm like, the fact that we're getting a Game of Thrones video game is what we've been saying. Hopefully it could end up being, and just hopefully it's successful enough to where they're like, all right, there's actually a reason to dive into this intellectual property. I don't really get it. It's Warner Brothers is just so weird with their video games. I don't get it.
I have to tell you, I'm a little concerned.
It's going to suck. God dang it.
Well, here's the thing. Nexon did do the finals, which is phenomenal. That's a great game. I very much enjoyed when I played it. They have also done Dynasty Warriors Mobile, which at first I was like, oh, it's definitely a gotcha game, pay to win, BS. Like I said, it was always going to be a Facebook game for Game of Thrones, you know. But it actually has really good ratings, and people seem to really like it. And I'm looking at some of the screenshots, and it actually looks kind of cool. So maybe there's hope. This didn't sound like it was going to be like an over the top, like pay to win kind of game from what I read, but it could be.
So also remember this, Nexon is a publisher.
That's
so
right.
Nexon is not developed. So let's see. At least that's what they're saying, but there is leaks that it could be happening. Either way, Nexon themselves is much more of a publisher. They have developed some games, but really it looks like what I'm seeing here is they're much, much more of a publisher. You know, like they published FIFA Mobile, they're publishing Arc Raiders, which actually looks super cool. It looks actually kind of like a Helldivers type game that was supposed to come out last year. It's coming out this year. Dave the Diver, so they published that. That's like a, for whatever reason, it's an indie game. People are really, really into it. You kind of go back and see here how they helped publish Titanfall.
Okay.
Right. You know, and some of it's also like they publish things more in like Korea or outside, you know, like the main things here. They help publish Final Fantasy 14 in Korea. So they share the thing. So I don't really know. We'll have to kind of wait and see on it. I guess maybe I'm a little less excited. But the fact that there are leaks about Game of Thrones games being in development is what we are here for.
Hey, we said we just wanted an attempt. We'll have to see, and maybe me and Matt will go live whenever it launches. Hopefully,
maybe we'll just make our own. We should our own Game of Thrones.
I have thought about this many a times, making a web applet, because that's kind of what I do. I've thought about making a web applet RPG, but the problem is that you run into is a cease and desist order from
We already have to deal with that.
With YouTube.
But if we're a Warner Brothers shareholder, technically we own the company. Okay. We are helping further a company that we're part of.
When do I get to go to the board meeting, Matt?
Actually, a lot of companies, you can actually go to shareholders meetings. If you own a certain amount of shares, and you can even ask questions. Like Nintendo, you have to, if you own 100 shares, you can physically go, you can physically go to the shareholders meeting and you can ask questions. Some guy literally did that a couple of years ago to ask where, it's called Mother in Japan. It's called Earthbound here in the United States. It's an old game that a lot of people really are very passionate about, and asked why they still have yet to do an English translation of the third game in the series, which was only ever released in Japan. So some guy literally bought enough stock to go ask them that. Like, hey, where's it at?
Could you imagine if I just dressed up like Tormund and sat in on it?
I know. Apparently, they want to keep publishing Mortal Kombat, and you know, so okay,
brother. I am lit off this cold brew I have right here. It's butter pecan cold brew, and it is. It's hitting. It's hitting hard.
Good. Good. Good.
Well, a little bit fired up today. Okay,
let's go. All right. You know, a little. Some people said we're a little long winded at the beginning. But
who said that?
I don't know. Every once in a while, we get a comment about it.
Skip ahead.
That's what it's there for. Hit skip. That's why I do shorts and clips, so you can just cut right into it. So, hey, let's get fired up about today's episode. All right.
We light the way.
We light the way, man. Wow. What an episode. Let me tell you, going back into this episode, the score of this episode was amazing. It was one of those that I don't really remember like thinking about it the first time around, but like even like the small details, and that's what you get on a rewatch of Viserys walking through the halls of Driftmark and like sort of subtly looking at things.
Certified slammer.
It was so also, here we go.
Some of the shots, just like scenery wise, too good.
Here we go. In the Vale, Daemon. Let me just say this here. Okay. I'm reading from the wiki here. So some people may have different takes on this. This is their writing of the summary of the episode. Okay. In the Vale, Daemon murders his wife, Lady Rhea Royce, before departing King's Landing. Sir Otto warns Queen Alicent that Rhaenyra becoming queen would make Alicent's two sons a threat to the crown. Rhaenyra and Sir Laenor Velaryon are betrothed, mollifying Lord Corlys. Understanding Laenor's homosexuality, Rhaenyra proposes fulfilling their royal duties to produce heirs, then pursue their own lovers. Sir Criston is humiliated when Rhaenyra declines his proposal to elope to Essos and assume new identities. She prefers their current sexual liaison. Alicent questions Criston about Rhaenyra and Daemon, but misunderstanding, he confesses to being Rhaenyra's lover. During Rhaenyra and Laenor's betrothal celebration, Alicent enters, interrupting Viserys' speech, wearing a green gown, the signal color for House Hightower's call to arms. Daemon also unexpectedly attends, confronted by Rhea's cousin. Daemon denies murdering her and wishes to assert his claim to inherit her lands. Laenor's lover, Sir Geoffrey Lawnmouth, surmises Criston is Rhaenyra's paramour. When Criston believes Joffrey. I was like, hold on a second. Right. Joffrey Lawnmouth, you know, you just see it by itself there. Believes Joffrey Lawnmouth is threatening blackmail and brutally kills him, devastating Laenor and horrifying guests. Rhaenyra and Laenor are privately wed late that night. Viserys collapses after the ceremony. Meanwhile, Alicent intervenes as a disgraced Criston Cole is about to commit suicide. Wow, let me tell you, a jam-packed episode.
Drama on drama on drama. And it's very interesting because the episode opens up very slowly. This is one of the first episodes where we really see, like, the next episode kind of just continue. Like the last thing, because we see Laris get introduced and he's playing like, well, there was tea sent to Rhaenyra. I'm hoping she's okay. And Alicent is realizing what this has done. And then you add that doubt with the conversation she obviously had with her father. And you start to see why Alicent is turning around. She kind of feels like she's been made a fool of. Laris has a brilliant line in this episode where he says how sweet it is to be wrong, because he's saying he was wrong about Rhaenyra being sick because he must have been mistaken, knowingly knowing that he's stirring the pot. And I think Alicent thinks about being wrong in that moment, being wrong about her father, because she kind of is the reason he's sent away, because she takes Rhaenyra's side. Also interesting that she was at the tree, the Weirwood tree, place that her and Rhaenyra have spent time whenever she gets this news. And I think her opinion starts to change of Rhaenyra in this moment. So, yeah, episode was crazy for not just character development of existing characters, but also introducing new people who are going to have a major role to play, such as Laris.
Yeah, and I'm trying to pull something up here in the book. I should have done here sooner. But let's talk about that opening line, okay? Because I mean, that's a pretty strong accusation. And the book describes it as horseback riding and horseback related event, I think. Equestrian related is how I would describe it, okay? I mean, some people might say he murdered her. Her horse fell on her. That's not Daemon's fault.
Are you suggesting that Daemon put her out of her misery and it was actually
I think other people might be. But I did Daemon do anything wrong in this situation? He was just going to say, "Hey, what's up?" Well, and she fell. And then he tried, what's he going to do? Leave her to die a slow death? I mean, he was giving her the gift of mercy.
Yeah, I think he murdered her, bro.
I don't know. I mean, do we see it? We don't see it happen.
Listen, I gotta say, I think that this is one of the most ridiculous episode openings. Like, watching it back, and he's just standing in the alley, like in the valleyway, just in the shittiest cloak I've ever seen. I don't actually know how much I like this opening scene on rewatch, to be honest with you. Like, yes. Why was he standing there? How did he know she was going to be there? It's a little loose and also just really funny.
So here we go. Murdered, but I found it. So I found it in the book. So this is the world in the World of Ice and Fire, which I believe I'll pull up Fire and Blood here, which I'm going to use the Rise of the Dragon book, but I do have it as well. So, so it says, the first of these, so let's see here, four tragedies in 120 AC caused it to be remembered as the Year of the Red Spring, for it laid the foundation of the Dance of the Dragons. The first of these tragedies was the death of Laena Velaryon, Laenor's sister. Once considered as a bride for Viserys, she had wed Prince Daemon in 115, which we know will, like, kind of get, you know, like, that's on its in happening, right? So the way the book sort of describes things is like, they kind of jump around a little bit. She had wed Prince Daemon in 115 AC after his wife, Lady Rhea, died while hunting in the Vale. That's all it says. But then there is, in parentheses, Daemon, meanwhile, had grown tired of the Stepstones and had given up his crown. Five other men would follow him as kings of the Narrow Sea until the Sellsword Kingdom ended for good and all. And that's literally all it says. It quite literally just said she died while hunting in the Vale. That's what the book says. I'll pull up Rise of the Dragon. Might be slightly different in that telling, but I think that's pretty much how it goes. So, cool way to sort of do it, right? Because I don't know that there's anything that otherwise suggests that Daemon would have killed her.
Yeah, I think that this is definitely like Miguel and Ryan Condell kind of adding a little bit here, because let's be fair, it may have been I don't know. You know what? I might just disagree with myself. I was going to say, if you had just heard that his lady wife had died in the Vale on a horseback accident, that it wouldn't have been enough. It would have sounded convenient. But now that I'm thinking about it, wouldn't it have been kind of interesting to get that in like a small council scene or in a passerby scene? And then we see Rhea's cousin or friend or whoever it is, confront Daemon and accuse him. And then we, as the viewer, get to decide whether or not we think he actually did this. You know what I mean? Like, you might've been able to kind of build a little bit of like,
hold on a second.
Okay.
He walks up to her and the horse falls on her.
I mean, he also bashes
her
a rock
after she might've died just right there.
What's he going to do? I don't know. Go get her some help.
I mean, she might already be dead. I mean,
She was talking. She was verbal.
But that doesn't mean that once you pull the horse off, remember in the movie Signs, it's like the car is literally holding her together, right?
Not what this is. She ran away.
The horse might literally be squeezing her.
Don't move the car. Oh my God. That's ridiculous.
All right, so yeah, I'm trying to pull this up here too. It's just a little before here to see if it's any different. Sixteenth birthday of the Queen Alicent. Yeah, it might be one of those things that's like listed in a different thing. And that's the thing, and that's one of the reasons I talk about not particularly liking either of these books, is because it's really kind of hard to find the information you're looking for. Cause it's like,
That's the fun part is that it's
because it's told in so many different things. So I guess that's 114. That's all 114. Yeah. See here. And actually it looks to here. Yeah. Okay. Here we go. Okay. Well, in Fire and Blood, it says, late in 115 AC, Lady Rhea Royce of Runestone fell from her horse while hawking and cracked her skull. She died 9 days later. Word eventually reached the Isle of Bloodstone, where Daemon still struggled to hold on his own kingdom against renewed assaults by the Triarchy and their Dornish allies. Daemon immediately departed for the Vale, claiming he was to see Lady Rhea buried properly. But the truth, he was more concerned with attempting to lay claim to her lands in Inclom, but Lady Rhea's nephew inherited instead. Mm-hmm. So there is actually is almost a very different telling. That makes Daemon wasn't even there.
The historical account that we have in the books definitely make it seem less likely that Daemon was involved, but I think we could still make that leap in logic if we wanted to. Right. The show did change this, and I saw some people very upset that this was changed. This is not one of those things that I'm willing to die on a hill about with the adaptation and fidelity to the source material.
I think it's great for the telling. However, I will say, and this is one of the things we've been saying, is that unlike Game of Thrones, in Game of Thrones, you do have unreliable narrators.
Oh yeah.
Is the thing, right? Because you're hearing from children, right? And often cases or people that are in, because it's a point of view, the books are still sort of unreliable narrators in that you're getting an account told by two different people, right? In history, I was a history major, by the way. We had to do these things called historiographies, which is where you look at certain events and how historians describe it. So you actually try to gather as much information as you can from the like many, many different viewpoints to just sort of see like this is how people are influenced by it and how people wrote about it or whatever. So like I did mine about John Adams, second president of the United States. And I made a strong argument that I actually think he's like one of the most important people in the as like a founding father, because his time as a founding father was like insane. I mean, all of the things he did for this country were insane. Pretty bad president, right? You know, in a way, he's kind of like Nixon. Like Nixon's political career sort of before he became president, like insane. I mean, he literally told off, you know, the Russian prime minister, Khrushchev, like in like this like debate, right? They like literally like that could have ended in like nuclear war about how the United States was better than Russia. Insane. And then he gets to be president, not so good,
but also notoriously clumsy.
Yeah. So anyway, the point of it was you look at the way people write about people and like all these different viewpoints. And so when people are writing about like John Adams' presidency, they're typically like, oh, he's a terrible, like they will even say things like he was just not a good person. When they write about him as a founding father, totally different. So that's one of the cool things that George has actually done, which is insane, by the way, in his histories. And probably one of the reasons, outside of just being a fan of Game of Thrones, that the developers for Elden Ring, which that was something we wanted to talk about, and we could actually quickly just mention that here, talked about, they said George Martin's work on Elden Ring, like writing these histories and lore, was the most important part of that game. Because they said then it allowed us like to establish like where we wanted the entire game to go. And that's what he's done here as well, which is by allowing for multiple accounts, you can read World of Ice and Fire, which is like two maesters telling it, and then Rise of the Dragon, which is another maester. Like, it's so different. It's so cool.
Oh yeah, definitely. And the show does a pretty good job of capturing this. This is one of the instances though. I mean, I guess we could sit here and ponder, did he hit her in the head with the rock or did he not? I think we all agree.
In the books. He did. Oh, he definitely did. Yeah.
Yeah. So they kind of gave us the answer here. But it totally changes the perception of Daemon, I think, at this point, especially last episode, because we see him and Rhaenyra not end up having sex, right? And there is some sort of like issue, whether it's a power dynamic or Daemon's conscious maybe coming back to haunt him. I think there's room for some sympathy for Daemon in the last episode, or maybe even just a tiny bit of respect. This episode opens up with him murdering his wife. So how are we supposed to feel about Daemon at this point? I think negatively. I've said I think he's an evil character, a great character, but very evil. And I don't know if murdering his wife is going to aid anyone who's trying to defend him.
Right.
It's very interesting. Also, Viserys and the account of Viserys being a bad king, but I think he's a good man. You know, you were talking about Nixon, and I was just thinking about, and I'm not necessarily
saying,
I'm not saying he was a good man. I'm not going to go that far, but I guess what I'm saying is just like, you know, sometimes the position does not suit the individual. And Viserys is 100% that. Did you notice whenever he's on the boat to Driftmark, like just how pathetic he looked, like puking over the side and being taken care of almost like elderly. And he's not a king that travels well. It just like there's so many.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Any little things in the show to show us that Viserys is a weak ruler?
Yeah. I will say also, like, the look on Viserys's face when he hears about Rhea Royce. Like, he knows. I mean, you could see it in his eyes. He knows Daemon killed her. He's just like brushes it off.
Well, last episode, remember, he's reminded by Viserys that he has a wife in the Vale.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
That's the next logical step in Daemon's sociopathic brain is to, well, I won't have one if she's dead.
Right. Yeah. I mean, real quick, what do we, it's hard to say, like, what do we think about Viserys as a ruler? I think even though, like, even like, that's one of the cool things about the show is, like, we get to see him. It's hard to argue that. I would argue, actually, there's two ways to sort of look at it. Like, I would argue that he's actually one of the best rulers.
Come on.
Well, because underneath him, the realm is still sort of in an era of prosperity. It's like, in a way, like, Robert Baratheon is a good ruler because under his tenure, the realm is relatively at peace. People are flourishing. It's certainly not like there's just open war while they are rulers. And he does die, you know, knowing, at least in his mind, that he has already set up succession and everything should be going the way it's supposed to go.
So here's the problem.
Is it his fault that all hell breaks loose when he dies?
It is. And so there's two things. First, just like Robert Baratheon, we see that a passive king who does not attend to functions or program, and that we can see this in presidency, by the way, if things are not upkept and just left, they will decay. That is the natural state of things that that desire, like funding or upgrades and leadership or expansion or something like this. We've seen presidents come into, and this is obviously from United States perspective, but see presidents come in and they may not slash a budget of something, but they don't give them any more money. They don't give them any more attention or plans. And actually, you can do just as much harm leaving something as it is for many years as then just outright cutting it. You can actually let it die, is essentially what's happening. And I think that Viserys and Robert Baratheon both have this problem of being passive with things. It didn't feel like he was necessarily worried about upkeeping anything. He kind of just wanted everyone to like him. And that is not the best way of ruling. And also the indecisiveness from him, from the standpoint of heir and you know, setting up.
I don't know. I think he was pretty decisive about his heir.
He was. All right. So he was decisive in making Rhaenyra his heir. That is true. But we've seen him at every single point have points of indecisiveness. He doesn't even decide his wife's situation. Right at the beginning of the show, he kind of just like backs off of it. So I just think that he could have done more to make it a peaceful transfer of power. Also, I think if he had not been so blind to Otto Hightower's influence, that a lot of this would not have happened. You know, we saw two episodes? Right. No, last episode. He sends Otto away and he's like, I've missed it all this time, but you have perfectly placed your family in line for the throne. And it's like, well, Viserys, you probably should have seen that coming 10 years ago. Like, you should have seen this coming way, 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 way earlier. So it's hard to, hindsight's 2020, but it's hard to not blame his indecisiveness on the death of dragons. Like, we are looking at the final kind of moments of the dragons. And it's
but he's not Aegon the Third, who literally is like, we're killing the dragons.
That's right. And here's the question. How far, like, where's the buck stop? Right.
Right.
Truman would say it stops at the president's desk, the king's desk, right? But
right. But I guess
you could go back and say maybe it's Jaehaerys's fault because Rhaenys wasn't. I mean, we could go back as far as we want.
Right.
So Viserys does get a lot of undue trash. He gets trashed a lot.
Yes, but I would argue in favor of Jaehaerys.
Oh, I love Jaehaerys. I think Jaehaerys is the best king of all time. Yeah.
Oh, you think? Oh, no, Jaehaerys is the GOAT. Yeah, easy. Yeah, no, I mean, Viserys. So I meant
anyone that focuses on infrastructure has my vote. That focuses on
infrastructure. But Viserys, I will argue, you know, that, again, under his tutelage, there's not open war. There's not open rebellion. Like, things are going pretty good. Yes. Is he a little lax towards people and tries to, like, make everyone feel comfortable and feel happy and all of that? Yes. But you have to remember that we are comparing him to the rest of all of the other rulers of Westeros. And by that standard, he's might be like top five. simply by maintaining the peace, you quite literally, you know, you don't have an open war. You don't, and I mean, he does in the step zones, but that's like away, you know, it's like literally you can tell that they don't even care about it. Cause they're like, yeah, whatever. Like, you know, it's far away. Like Damon and Corliss are off there doing their own war. Have fun doing whatever it is you want to do down there in the step zones. Like we could really care less. But you know, I mean, if they aren't there, he's not like, it also helps that he and his, while he may be a weak person, he's certainly sort of like a good person.
Yes, I think he is a good person, and I like him. I even think he's a pretty good father, honestly. So I like Viserys, don't get me wrong. But he also just accepts way too much disrespect. Like in this episode, when Corliss does not come out to greet him, I'm thinking in my head, like, off with his head, dude. Like, this is the king. And also, we're not talking about Robert Baratheon's Westeros. We're talking about the Targaryen Westeros. We're talking about the Dragon Lords. And Corliss has the gall to not just not greet him, but to say that we're going to switch the name whenever, you know, Rhaenyra has a baby.
Right.
And that heir comes, it'll have the name Valeri. I mean, come on.
I don't know. He asked for clarification. He says, you know, under Westeros tradition, you know, well,
we know exactly.
I just feel like being in defense of everybody today.
I know. Hey, you know what? That's what makes this fun. Yeah. I mean, you once said the Lannisters were not as bad as the Tyrells. So
I have more respect for them. The Lannisters. They know who they are. They're not trying to weasel their, you know.
You know, that angle, I can actually accept that from that angle. Yeah. I could respect that. But Viserys just takes too much disrespect. I mean, he should be putting his foot down. I mean, even Daemon mocked his dead son, which we don't think he really did, right? Or maybe if he did, he was coaxed into it, or his words or whatever.
Yeah.
If someone had done that,
they don't really show that.
They don't, and it's up for interpretation.
Which is also the kind of, like, that's another thing that's so cool about this show, is they leave so much of it up to. I think House of the Dragon, by the way, just on that note, is like damn near perfect, because the nods they give to the book readers without, like, Marvel is very guilty of this, in that Marvel will show you something and you have to go look up online while it's cool, like why it's cool. They're like, hey, we just did this cool thing. Like, you need to, like, you should either know what it is, or like you should go research why it's cool. Like, they'll just show a character and everybody should just know it. In House of the Dragon, even more so than Game of Thrones, they will do things like the lemon tree that Larys.
Oh, I loved it.
Like before Braavos. So if you're not watching, you're like, what? Okay, that's kind of cool. And then he talks about it a little bit, but he goes in a different direction. That's like, it's just like there's layers to this thing. Well, where he's talking, he's like, it can actually still thrive here. Like talking to Alicent about it in a way that, like, you could thrive here, playing the Game of Thrones while giving a cool thing without right being like, oh, this is cool because, you know, Danny might have been born by a lemon tree.
Fan service done the right way, because it adds to the scene, it adds to the show, it adds to the characters, while also giving us nerds an opportunity to geek out over a lemon tree being behind a scene where they're talking about something where it shouldn't grow in Braavos. That's layered storytelling, but also the right way to do fan service. Fan service has turned into this thing where everyone says anytime there's fan service, it's a negative. That's not true. You can do good fan service. It is possible to do that. I think that later Game of Thrones seasons did it very poorly. But there was still stuff in the early seasons.
Having Ed Sheeran in.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah, I mean, come on now. but fan service is not inherently a negative thing. It can be done well. House of the Dragon does it well.
Yeah. So that's one of the things I'm really excited for season two, to see all of the other little details that they're going to include and things like that.
Easter eggs, as they say.
Right. Like even not outright showing Daemon kill his wife, right? I mean, that's like, that's ties back into what we just read in the books, where it's like, well, she died horseback riding. Well, she did die horseback riding.
Technically, you know? That's what
the horseback form. Related, right? Horseback. Remember when COVID came out, they're like, oh, it's COVID related. What's COVID related mean?
You know? I mean, you see this a lot, like, of times. Like, reports, and then you look at it, you're like, wait, what does that mean? And you realize that somebody just phoned it in that day. They're like, I don't want to do this.
Like, we
all have off days.
Right. Well, I mean, the guy got shot. Okay, but he got shot in the heart, so it was technically heart. It was heart failure related.
Heart failure,
yeah, right? You know what I mean? It's like, well, it wasn't his heart that gave out. It was the fact that he got shot. You know,
external factor made the heart fail. Yes,
that's how these lawyers and insurance companies, they all argue. You know, it's like, oh yeah, I mean,
getting pedantic.
Yep, got to get all specific about it. So, all right, let's continue on because this episode's huge, right? I mean, we could literally just focus. We could talk an entire thing just about like Viserys. So let's shift gears here and let's actually talk a little bit about Foot Fetish McGee, aka Laris Strong here, who's really kind of introduced the limper. Yep,
the limper.
the limper. Yeah, really. Because you know, we focus so much on Rhaenyra and stuff in these episodes, and there's a lot. Don't get me wrong; we'll touch on that a little bit too. But wow, I mean, here we go. This is kind of I don't really know the. In a way, he's kind of like Baelish. He feels a little bit more than Baelish because he feels kind of sort of more powerful, and since he's more behind the shadows, and
he is a pervert.
He is definitely a pervert. Yep. There's no qualms about that. But he immediately sort of comes in and like just really, it's not really blackmailing Allison, but certainly has sort of like sway over her. You know, she feels like,
well,
she doesn't have many allies.
Yeah, no one likes to be made a fool of, right? And right. What Allison gets out of the conversation with Laris and her father in this episode is that she's been made a fool of, that she was a chess piece in the Game of Thrones. And I think Laris immediately gets some sort of rapport with her because he is letting her in on that. And she feels, I think, indebted to being shown this. So I think that's kind of where the leverage starts to build.
Yeah. And then what he gets out of the relationship is being shown her feet. So there's that. It's like the most wild scene in almost all of it, because it just comes out of nowhere and you're just like, what the fuck is happening?
I did not expect the foot fetish thing to make it. And I mean, I didn't expect it at all, but like when it was happening, I was like, wow, okay, this is House of the Dragon.
This is happening. Yeah. Yeah.
Are you a little robo on your side, by the way?
What do you mean?
It sounds robotic, like a bad connection type deal.
Oh, I don't know. I can check here.
It might be me. It could be me.
Let me look. I don't know. Let's check her out here. How about now?
Still sounds a little robotic.
Well, let me plug it my thing in, plug it back in. Maybe it could be. My Scarlet always freaks out. So let's give her a try here.
I think it's an internet thing because your video is also frozen on my end.
Really? Frozen?
Yeah, you're not even on the screen right now, actually.
What?
Oh, now you're back. You're back.
Is it less robotic?
Yeah, you're good now. Yeah.
Oh, weird.
Just a little hiccup.
Okay, there we go. I'm not even going to edit that out. I'm gonna leave it. This is what happens behind the scenes. Every once in a while, we have a weird little hiccup. You know, that's all.
I just wish that we could do it in the same room. You know,
it would be much easier. Yeah, but we quite literally we could not live any further apart from each other in the United States. We are both literally on the coasts of our respective country.
We really are.
Okay. Well, so let's continue on here, Jimmy, as we're getting closer to an hour here. Let's talk about the big scene, which is Alicent walking in, wearing green, while Viserys is talking, sort of being her like, all right, I'm here to play the Game of Thrones now moment.
Yeah, it is her entering into the battle royale, making a massive statement, definitely making her father happy, right? Otto would be proud. I think that do you think she was manipulated into this moment a bit? I do.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. I think whenever Otto left, this was his Hail Mary. Whenever he was telling her about how she's being deceived and her children will die. And I mean, really just crazy, crazy talk. But maybe that's also the downside of a monarchy, right?
Do you think Laris is doing his own agenda, or do you think Otto and him were working behind the scenes together, which is never really stated in the books?
Yeah, I think Laris is probably out for his own thing, mostly, but I think he's probably going to use whoever he needs to get to where he wants to be. But Laris, I think, has his own motivations. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Just because as like Otto leaves and then immediately Laris steps in and is like, hey, here's how it should go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Allison does have, I mean, this moment is epic, by the way. This is probably for me one of the top scenes of the season. Definitely eclipsed by Viserys's walk scene later.
That's like GOAT Game of Thrones scene. I mean, that's like top.
There's
five.
A lot of walking in this show.
There is epic, power, right? Walkings.
Rhaenyra power walking from the birthbed. Viserys power walking to the throne. Allison power walks into a feast. Like, walking's a big deal
in Game of Thrones. I know, the whole deal. Daenerys walking at the end of season 8. I mean, that's still pretty.
Rickon trying to run.
Well, I mean, if he had, maybe I don't. Yeah.
Ever heard of strafing kid? You ever played Halo?
His problem was that he didn't learn how to dodge.
Dip.
So
dive,
yeah,
and dodge.
Yeah, I will agree with you. Super moment for Allison doing that walk in. And again, this is really one of those things that does sort of like, even though we know like the whole thing is going to kick off later, this is really one of those like first like real moments of the whole event being like, all right, now we're like choosing sides. Because next episode, by the way, when we do a big time shift, their relationship is totally different.
Yes, and everything changes from this episode on, obviously, but we see the kind of the bricks being laid of the new Allison, if you will, and this scene is kind of the birth of that. I feel like one of the things in this episode that kind of comes after this is obviously Crispy Cole and his him losing his mind and killing somebody at this feast. And one of the criticisms I saw about this show is that it was super there's a lot of brutality in this show that happens in the court. It's a lot different. For instance, we'll see later on where Corlys's family member gets his head chopped in half whenever he speaks out against the king in the walk episode. We see Crispy Cole beat someone to death. We see Daemon beat a messenger to death. We see peasants' lives kind of thrown to the wayside. And I saw a lot of people saying that it was violence for violence sake or hyper drama, which, by the way, I have no problem with. It's television and it's fantasy. We can do whatever we want. However, I think some people are forgetting that this is not the same Westeros or court that we saw
in
Game of Thrones. Not only is it a different time period, which we can just assume, hopefully, that the society has progressed a little bit and become a little bit more civilized, even though it's, you know, to us still kind of the Dark Ages or the Middle Ages, but also it's a totally different ruling family. I mean, this is it's a different method of ruling, even if it's still a monarchy. It's just a very different thing, and Valyria is even more removed from the customs of what we consider to be normal. So I saw a lot of people saying if Crispy Cole did that, he'd be kicked out of the Kingsguard. I don't necessarily think that's true. I think that we are living in a far more brutal era. I think you can see that from the tournament that we see in episode 1. That tournament looks very different than what we saw in Game of Thrones, and Bobby Baratheon says, you know, stop in the name of your king. Those are the little tiny societal progresses that we've seen, and plus a different ruling class. I'm just saying, I think it makes sense. I don't think it's actually over the top.
That's what I want to sort of maybe like, as we begin to wind down, finish with was, the Criston Cole thing where he literally just kills somebody in the court, like during this like wedding feast and, you know, all this stuff. Like, it's insane, but I agree with you that there is a big difference between the Baratheon sort of Lannister rule and the Targaryens, because as we see very much from Daemon and other Targaryens, and one of the reasons I like Viserys is he doesn't come across that way, is the Targaryens, one, literally come from Valyria, which is magic, and they have dragons, and dragons can literally rule over people. So as you see with Daemon, he quite literally is like, dragons made us. Like, we are above them.
Yes.
Like it's not even just a family thing. Like, I think there is like, you can see it with Damon where he sort of is talking about Valyria and I should be able to take two wives. Like, that's like the blood of Valyria is different than the blood of everything else. And Damon doesn't even care that Vaemon later, as we see, I mean, he kills him right in the court.
Yes. But
to be fair to Damon, he is speaking lies in front of the king. He like calls the king basically like a liar to his face in the court, and nobody says a word when Damon does it. It does feel very different though, like what Damon does there. And some of it may just be the way the story is presented than what we hear about like the Mad King doing, because you see it from the people who had to suffer through it. Like, we hear about it through Jaime Lannister, and it's like, this was terrible. Like, this was like insane. Like, he literally like torched Ned Stark's dad, right? And like hung his brother, you know, or hung him up.
It was a massive social shift.
Like, totally. Yeah. Totally different. Totally, totally different.
And for people who might think that this shouldn't have been that much different back then, I would implore you to realize that we had duels that our U.S. president, United States is not that old. We had U.S. presidents that were doing duels. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was
Andrew Jackson, man, killed like 29 people.
That's what I'm saying. It was what, 200 years ago? Not even?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so yeah, man. This is a much bigger time gap than I think we realize. And you're right. The Mad King and the Civil War and Robert's Rebellion, all this stuff comes from it. Of course, socially, things are going to change a little bit, especially in the courts. So I also think, by the way, that, and we're talking about Damon's moment more so here, but like Damon's moment later on is a stark contrast between how things are going to go with him near the throne rather than what Viserys was doing. And if that is behavior that is rewarded in the courts and how the ruling class sees things to be fit, there's no reason why someone doing that, aka Crispy Cole, would not be rewarded for that behavior, because it's considered strong,
right?
Honorable to stand up for yourself like that.
And you know what we're talking about with eras, actually, I think there's something else that's really interesting. Is even the Targaryens post Aegon the Third feel very different than the Targaryens up to essentially before, you know, up Aegon or Viserys, right? Because the Targaryens with dragons versus the Targaryens without dragons feel totally different, because it's harder to sort of rebel against them or feel like they're not almost like gods because they have dragons and there's really nothing you can do about it, right? It's much more different. And even the Targaryens later, I mean, Aegon is sort of a good guy, right? But like he's really one of the only persons we really get like sort of, we don't get his point of view, but we get secondary. Like a biography.
You know? Yeah.
You're right. I mean, he's right there. You get like his secondary point of view. Daenerys is kind of different because she's like totally removed from the whole situation and stuff. Whereas Aegon is much more sort of in that dynasty, still that Targaryen dynasty. But the way he sort of views things, he still does sort of view it as in a way of like, we're Targaryens, but it's not as, I think he would like look totally different at just like, you know, burning somebody in the Red Keep or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that there's a lot of really cool discussion around like the progress we see in Westeros, and Jaehaerys is probably the best example of it. Actually, we joked about infrastructure, but he was actually massive for the realm, right? Went and saw the wall and all these other things. But even Aegon the Conqueror compared to someone like Daemon. Daemon might be tame compared to Aegon the Conqueror, because he's a conqueror for a reason. I mean, the dude was
right. Aegon's reign, from what we hear though, and eventually we might see it, might be somewhat less brutal though than what we're seeing now, because they don't really have that. He won't necessarily have that arrogance, because he's still trying to like unite the realm, and he also just like defeated half the realm, and he has dragons, and it's like at least now they're still, as we'll see, there's dragons that could be on multiple sides here. Whereas then there was only three dragons and nobody else could really do anything. Nobody else could really do anything about it. So it's like, hey, they just destroyed Harrenhal, which we thought was like damn near impossible to break. And they destroyed it in like a day.
Well, yeah. And I guess I'm thinking more so from like Aegon the Conqueror's willingness to use the nuclear option of dragons. Like, he just does it to be, to unite them, right? Yeah, I mean, he's really trying to take over. Whereas someone like Viserys is a lot more reasonable in realizing the dragons are power that the Targaryen should have never messed with. But what we're seeing around him are people who are saying, well, why don't we use these dragons more? Like, let's go. Again, right. Rhaenyra rides her dragon down in episode two, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we're starting to see that flex of power, and then we're going to see an all-out civil war that includes dragons.
Well, some people respect that, though. I mean, that's the whole Blackfyre Rebellion as well. He had the sword and the look. It
feels like people were not ready for Viserys, a Viserys type of ruler during this era. Is kind of what I'm getting at. You know, he was someone that kind of wanted to put the dragons on the back burner. He didn't ride his dragon after Balerion died, right? So, it feels like Viserys might have been ahead of his time, maybe.
I think, well, it's hard to tell because we don't see so much of Jaehaerys's reign, because Jaehaerys's reign was so good that Viserys—that's what he would have viewed. Unlike, you know, like Maegor the Cruel looks at his dad, Aegon the Conqueror, maybe his dad, might not be, looks at Aegon the Conqueror and it's like, my dad was a conqueror. I mean, in a way, it's sort of the same thing. Saying it's actually one of the scenes I really like. In Game of Thrones, where Joffrey's telling off like Cersei and everyone, and he's like, my dad slew Rhaegar Targaryen on the Trident. You know, of course, he doesn't know that it's not actually his dad, but I really did like that we got that, where you get a little insight into Joffrey that we don't get in the books, because that in a way does help kind of describe his personality more than just being like an evil person who's inbred. Yes. Where he's like, my dad, it was the conqueror. Like,
yeah, there's a sense of entitlement.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. When he's talking about how we should like defeat the Starks and everything. So, you know, I mean, I kind of like that we got that insight into Joffrey in Game of Thrones that we didn't get like in the books.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good, man. It's just, there's so many layers.
I mean, a 60-minute episode, and I think you could just take just the final 15 minutes and talk about it for 2.5 hours. I mean, how far do you want to go? Also we have to think, we don't have to, but we should think about the historical context of Criston Cole and how he is remembered, because Jamie thinks about him so much in the later books.
Yeah, I know,
you know, going, we're going to be starting, you know, Feast for Crows before too long here. Once we get back to the reread, we got to get through the rest of Storm of Swords. But every time Crispy Cole's name comes up, you know, we're going to probably think about House of the Dragon and some of the stuff that we saw. So,
yeah,
something to look out for.
Yeah. And speaking of things to look out for, next week we will be back and we will be discussing House of the Dragon, episode 6, The Princess and the Queen, which, by the way, is the time shift big episode. We get the adult actors, not for everybody, but the adult actors for like Rhaenyra and Alicent. Mm-hmm. And then we get, like the kid versions of Aegon and Aemond and them. And then we'll do another sort of time shift later. But yeah, so that's where we will be next time. House of the Dragon, episode 6, The Princess and the Queen.
And if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheneepodcast.com.
We will see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.